Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. Today is Wednesday, April 21st, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're joining us live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work, which is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using for to great advantage for the past 16-plus years to manage my emotions and turn any negative emotion experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we're all gifted with. So I've noticed a tremendous improvement in my relationships, physical, mental, and emotional health, and amazingly, I spend the tiniest fraction of time in experiencing negative emotions compared to what I did prior to learning these tools. You can also download the actual tool itself absolutely free. It's a PDF file. Click, print it off, use it as often as you'd like. You can download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through the actual worksheet process and they can serve as a tutorial for you. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and download a completely free and private app that lets you have access to the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, and then give us a call. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And in our current format, we're here 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, just for that purpose, to be of service, to help people learn about and improve their use of these tools. We've also agreed to do the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. And today is the 111th day of the year, and therefore we're on lesson 111. And 111 begins a review. And the intro to the review is 13 paragraphs long. So I'm not going to read that whole intro and use our showtime for that. But I will point out that the core message in that intro is that the practice periods are recommended, and try to follow them as much as you can, and when you can't, let it go. But notice the difference between the situation I'm in right now, my life, my children, my work demands my attention, and therefore I can't do the practice period this hour. as opposed to I'm sitting here out on a park bench on a lovely day, and I just choose not to do the practice period. And the caution is that that will be detrimental. That will be our unwillingness, which will be an impediment to our learning. But the actual day-to-day life events, and when they interfere with the lessons, that's not impeding anything. So, lesson 111 is a review of two previous lessons. Lesson 91, miracles are seen in light. And the commentary is, I cannot see in darkness. Let the light of holiness and the light of truth light up my mind, and let me see the innocence within. Lesson 92 reads, miracles are seen in light, and light and strength are one and the same thing. Commentary says, I see strength, the gift the Creator gave to me, and my weakness is the dark that his gifts dispel by giving me his strength to take its place. And so on the hour, we recite to ourselves, miracles are seen in light. And on the half hour, we recite, miracles are seen in light, and light and strength are one and the same thing. So that's the lesson for today and the review, and it's recommended to go back and read the intro to the review because it talks a little bit more specifically about how we can block ourselves by being unwilling. Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles Experiment, highlights the title for this review section is Boom! And she quotes Rob Bell as saying, you're here and you're breathing and you get to take part in the ongoing creation of the world. Pam writes, this review, lessons 111 through 120, is all about the Bennies. Radiant X wants to show off to prove to you just how much there is to gain by working this course. In return for a very small ask of 5 minutes, twice a day, Radiant X will completely rewire your thoughts. The trick, and this is where the asshat doth protest, the trick is to use the lessons each time your peace is threatened. Again, make it automatic. Use the lessons as a mantra. Rather than a different jukebox selection for each day of this review, I suggest repeating this one, Dance to the Music by Sly and the Family Stone, or pick your own favorite. So the first thing in the morning, devote 5 minutes to the lesson, and then right before sleeping, give it another five. Apply it as needed. This is a piddly request for a ginormous outcome. Lesson 111, titled, Why I Subscribe to the Premium Channels. Someone on her Twitter feed shared, standing on the corner of awesome and bomb diggity. The morning review. What you need to know is miracles are natural. And then you also need to know miracles are effortless. So she writes, the skinny is, while much of the world subscribes to the default frequency, the one that outpictures the world we watch on the news, I commit to an amplified frequency instead of operating from the culturally agreed upon channel that radios in limitations, lack, and division. I tune into the premium channel that broadcasts a fuller, more beautiful, more accurate picture. This, I find, is reality. So, miracles are seen in light. Miracles are seen in light, and light and strength are one and the same. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581, And we have a full 50 minutes to take your comments, your questions, have a discussion. Do a worksheet. Discuss what was going on in our support group last night. Whatever would be of service to you is what we're interested in providing. I'm in a situation in my life these days where I'm blessedly busy. I have private practice, psychology practice. I have the two support groups. I have the internet show 5 days a week. And I have a regular series of questions from people about why do you do all of this? What benefit is to you? And the benefit that it is to me primarily, I think, is that I don't get caught constantly listening to talk radio or television or the doom and gloom series. And so when I'm doing the Mind Shifters Radio or the support group, or it puts me in a place where I feel like, you know what, for my next show or for my next support group, or I should have something that is uplifting, that is positive, that's creative. It's either a review of the tools or it's a different way to think about life. And so rather than flipping through social media or getting stuck watching television or listening to talk radio, I'm more often than not spending my time between sessions or when I'm doing domestic work at home listening to a book on tape or really good music of my choosing. And there, over the past, I don't know, 10 years or so that we've been doing this internet show, that has kind of primed me to have that thought that I want to be doing things when I'm not on the show that might spark good content for the show, or when I'm not in the support group that might put me in a space where I'm predisposed to think in the way that these teachings would have me think. So I've fallen into the cycle of listening to or reading books, and several of them have been so powerful and useful that they've become a part of a series or a cycle that I do. And one of those is Alan Cohen's book, The Tao Made Easy. And that book and his intro to it are dear to my heart in a number of ways. And what he talks about is that his interest, I mean, if you think about it, I think he said there's thousands of titles. If you go to Amazon and type in the Tao Te Ching, there are thousands of books that come up that are still in print about the Tao. And he thought, well, why would I write another one? What could I possibly add to this? And I really like it when people don't take themselves so seriously and they ask, you know, real powerful questions like that, because otherwise ego gets in the way. And so he decided that since his whole practice in life is practical, useful application of knowledge, that he would find a way to talk about the lessons, not just listing each one of them and then trying to interpret them, but do it from a way of kind of creating a narrative about life. And then he had one of the lessons from the Tao that it just didn't make sense to him And so he got this, like a voice in his head that said, well, ask Lao Tse, ask the master. And so he did this little visualization in his head, asking the master, what does this mean? And it felt like he was getting a download. So he decided that this is not a bad idea. And then he wove it into, as it expanded, the energies, the visions he got. He decided that each of his chapters would have one of those little vignettes in it, where he was going into a meditation and imagining what it would be like if he was actually the student of the wise old man back in ancient China, 2,500 years ago. And that has become, you know, when I first listened to this book, and I listened to the audible of it, and he's reading it in his own voice, which I really enjoy most of the time. There are a few authors that are not as fluent with their reading, and it isn't as enjoyable. But most of the time, I appreciate hearing the book read by the author, and he or she adds their personality to it, which enriches the experience for me. And that's the case here with Alan Cohen's The Tao Made Easy. And the whole point of his doing this with humility and with simplicity is that he's trying to help the intention, because the story is that the wise old man, Lao Tse, was so fed up with all the complexities of life and the kingdom that he decided to just go live a simple life. And as he was trying to exit the kingdom, the guard said, please, don't leave without writing down your wisdom. And he wrote down these 87 couplets or whatever it is, these statements. And that became one of the, it's, I think he said it is the most copied, printed, interpreted book other than the Bible in our history. So there is a tremendous amount of wisdom. There is, I think, beauty in the way he writes about it. It's rather poetic. And, of course, there's wisdom. And wisdom for a complicated world. Well, some might say that we're living in a rather complex world. Some might say that these days we are inundated with stimulation, with opinions, with conflict, with positions that we are urged to take, whether or not we actually have a, as my father would say, a dog in the fight. And in the introduction, he talks about how there's an ancient blessing, or some say it's a curse, that says, may you live during interesting times. And of course, it's always an interesting time to be on the planet. And one of the things that makes this time so interesting is that we are constantly being asked for our attention by various forces, whether they are family that's in need or whether it is merchants that want us to buy their product or whether it's governments that want us to support their efforts or whether it's religions that want us to support their group experience and their identity. So we have or whether it's the devices that we carry that have been programmed to get us to turn them on and stay focused on them and not put them down and check them obsessively. And so the idea that Alan Cohen decided to write this book that was written 2,500 years ago in response to a question, please tell us your wisdom, from a man who was trying to escape the chaos and brutality of the, quote, civilization that he lived in, makes it, for my mind, eye and ear, a really relevant read. And Lao Tzu was had been appointed as the what was a coveted position at that time, to be the keeper of the empirical archives. But he grew disillusioned with the divisive of politics and the war and all the complexities in the society and decided to leave the city and go to a more peaceful life. Well, if you're having any sense that your life is chaotic and that you might yearn for a little bit of a slower pace or some peace, this might be a really good place for you to turn. This book contains many, but not all, of the stanzas of the Tao Te Ching. And he chose the stanzas that would just underscore the highlighted themes of the book. And he did these dramatized vignettes to help you imagine what it would be like to be walking with a true, centered, calm teacher in the world where there's such chaos. So, I should mention, I don't get any royalties if people buy this book after this. My interest in promoting this is to help people learn to turn inside themselves for their connection to the Tao. And the Tao, T-A-O, means the flow of life, means the eternal wisdom, means the one mind. It might mean the same as the Christ mind. And for somebody who understands that Christ was not a person but is an office, as Dr. Michael Rice talks about it, it is this state of mind that is open to input, insight, intuition, guidance from a more integrated perspective than our conscious, logical, rational mind can give us. So, one of the quotes in the book early on is, "While it appears that the universe is a foolish, even cruel play of random events, there is an intelligence operating behind the scenes, a fabric of life that integrates all creation. This power is invisible to the eye, and yet more real than anything the senses can touch. It is a mystery to the intellect, but knowable to the heart. It is life itself." Lao Tzu called it the Tao, the Great Way. So, I had a barely 30-year-old in my office yesterday, and we were trying to talk about his efforts to extract himself from the chaos and the cruelty and the never-ending struggle for attention and the demands on his time. And we were trying to talk about learning to go inside himself and just ask to be shown, learning to trust his inner guidance and intuition. And for me, it was a fascinating conversation because he comes from a tradition. He was raised without a religious tradition, but then when he had difficulty with addictions, he went into the 12-step program. And that tradition is talking about how we're powerless and we shouldn't be self-reliant, and or self-controlled. And it was a fascinating conversation to help him redefine the judgment. So his definitions, as we unraveled them, about, you know, going inside and doing what he wants is more like acting impulsively on whatever urge comes up in his mind. And we were talking about the difference between that and learning to get quiet and calm and ask to be shown from a space of just wanting my life to get better, a space of wanting to be able to appreciate the flow of life in, through, as, and around me. And if I ask from that genuine space of wanting to be shown and wanting to know, and then I don't kick in the intellectual mind that wants to figure it out, I simply do the next thing that feels okay to do, what happens is I learn. Guy Finley says, you can't do that. You can't ask to be shown and then take an action without the truth, without life showing you what's true and what's false. So even if I make a mistake, I learn, and life goes on. And even if I do the perfect thing to be a blessing to myself and others, then I learn again, and I'm in the moment, and I'm grateful for the choice I made and the consequences. When I make a choice and I'm not so happy with the consequences, I breathe and I ask to be shown again, and I have a lesson. And if I keep repeating the process, I train my mind differently than this Western mind training to put aside the figuring it out and learn to ask and then listen for the message from the still small voice or from the intuition or from Holy Spirit or from God or light or love or whatever you want to call it. And that's a training process, which is why we are here so often on this internet show, 5 days a week. It isn't a one-shot deal. I don't just say, okay, I've decided this is it, and then no more effort, everything flows, and I'm always tuned into the best thing for me and others. This is a reprogramming of what Guy Finley would call a mechanical level of mind that just keeps churning away. It has a lot of momentum for this negativity and for this second guessing and for this trying to figure it out. One of the things we did last night was in the support group was listen to Eli Jackson Bear, and he's the life partner for Ganga Ji. And they were talking about how Eli made the decision to devote his life to supporting his teacher, Papa G. And the thing he was saying is, I didn't do anything. And Ganga G corrected him and said, well, no, you did something. You said yes. You said yes to the opportunity to learn from somebody who had learned from a teacher, who had learned from a teacher. So there's this body of wisdom like the Tao Te Ching. There's this history on the planet of people who have struggled with the mental emotional distortions and the desire to be good and the obsessions that are often triggered by the outside stimuli. And what we're asked to do in this work is tune into the part of our mind that can teach us from a higher level of integration. It's not tied into the conscious, logical, rational mind, which often can't remember what to take to the office without having to go back and make another trip home or find our car keys in a hurry, etc. So we're encouraging people with these tools, the reality management worksheet, the three early memories of conflict, as we were talking about yesterday, the mind goal management sheet, we're encouraging people to continually commit for themselves to learn about and remove the garbage or the blockages that they have preloaded from their family of origin or their culture that prevent them from being intimately, actively, constantly connected to the inner wisdom that can provide them what they're looking for, which is what? Peace, serenity, joy, productivity, gratitude, appreciation. What are you looking for? Each of us might have a slightly different way to answer that question. What do you want? What are you looking for? And every one of these great spiritual traditions is designed to help you figure out how to get rid of everything in your life except the things that will give you that peace, that connection, that yearning that sits deep in the soul of most people, certainly every spiritual seeker. So that's what we're here to support people in doing, and Michael and Jeannie are making some very practical tools available toward that end. I had somebody in my office yesterday who was raging, absolutely raging. And when you listen to that person talking about why they're raging, if you listen from the purely conscious logical realm, you would soon be raging with them. However, as these great spiritual teachings tell us, it's not that you're not going to get angry, but quit fooling yourself into thinking that your anger is justified. Unless you are in a fight-or-flight response, trying to keep yourself from being eaten by a grizzly bear or a mountain lion, the rage response, the emotional energy that we experience as rage, is misplaced unless it is a short burst that keeps us physically alive and is done without thought. But beyond that, every time we're angry, I think I was mentioning this yesterday, that John Gray, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, he talks about how anger is always a secondary emotional experience, and its underlying causes are either fear or sadness. And of Course in Miracles, and Michael Rice might say, you know, there's either fear or pain, and John Gray says it's fear or sadness. You're going to have something that you don't want to feel that's underlying your anger, and the anger is essentially a distraction from that, a drug to help you avoid feeling it. And the only way out is through. I need to allow myself to feel these emotions. I need to allow myself to accept these emotions and let myself feel them and study them so I can understand them. I can't deal with or dismantle something that I don't understand. I can't run away from something and deal with it or dismantle it. And herein lies the rub for most of us. Most of us do not like the idea that we need to allow ourselves to feel feelings before we can be educated about the best use of that energy signal and the information it contains. I have routinely have people come to see me in therapy and they want the magic bullet. They want the super duper pill and the magic wand, and they want me to give them the quick technique that they can use once or twice and then never have to use again. And whether they're half joking or dead serious, they're quite dismayed when I tell them I don't know of any such thing. And every time I've encountered somebody who said they had such a thing, it was a scam. The truth is, all of my upsets are energies that can teach me about myself and my life. And the only way for me to improve my life is for me to learn. I love Guy Finley. At one point, he has a talk where he says, imagine that you could take the position that every time something happens that you don't like in life, every time something happens that you don't like, that's either causing frustration or physical pain or the loss of a loved one or whatever, and you have a negative reaction to it, you could choose this interpretation. You could choose to approach it as though life, God, light, love, the Tao, whatever you want to call it, was saying to you, hey, Tim, would you like to know what is keeping you from knowing me and loving me more fully? Because right here in this moment, this is part of what's keeping you from knowing life and loving it more fully. Whatever it is I reject, whatever it is that I use as an excuse to generate the anger, the fear, the sadness, the hurt, the hostility, that's what's keeping me from knowing and loving the flow of life more deeply. And fortunately, we can offer tools to people to help them apply the tool persistently and consistently every time a negative emotion comes up, using their negative emotion as the guidance system to direct them where they should focus their attention and what should be put in this specific worksheet process. So you're not left out here alone. You're in the world with a teacher, with a guide that will never abandon you if you just ask to be taught. Susan, are you there?
I'm there. Hi, Dr. Tim. So I'm glad you're talking about John Gray. I listened to that podcast yesterday, and it was wonderful, and I see why you're saying that what he was talking about is so much like Michael's in your work. But he went into another area, and that was the area of, Michael touches on it when he talks about eating right as a way to just get yourself set up so that you can get maximal benefit from any emotional work you do. If you have physical support too, he probably would talk about exercise, and he talks about being among people a certain amount, getting out, not living in a dark room with the shades down and all that. But I'm really interested in what he talks about in the way of lithium, which goes right over in my mind to allopathic medicine and perhaps something that would allow us to maybe bypass some of the work we need to do if we're given a medication. Now, lithium, I guess, is a natural substance.
Yeah, he's not talking about the lithium as a medication. He's not talking about lithium carbonate. He's talking about lithium as lithium orotate, which is, you know, something that will pass through the blood-brain barrier and allow you to take, you know, 1/500th of what the doctor would give you, which then builds up in your system and has toxic effects. There's a very narrow window of therapeutic dosage, which is why when people take lithium the way it's prescribed by medical doctors, they're taking lithium carbonate, and they have to have frequent blood tests. They have to monitor it very carefully, because the toxic effects at the high end are so pronounced. But with lithium orotate, you can go on Amazon right now and buy lithium orotate. There's because they know you can't really hurt yourself with it, because they're given in such low doses that it's not going to build up and be toxic. So in that way, it's more like a homeopathic remedy or a vitamin or a supplement than it is a medication.
Well, he talked about a lot of things that you should be taking, magnesium, calcium, zinc. And I'm thinking, wow, has he built himself a remedy and is he selling it? I mean, I want some. It sounded like something that I would not be concocting in my kitchen, but if somebody did it for me, I'd be very interested in taking it. Do you happen to know if he went in that direction at all? I mean, I'm telling you, it's just what you were talking about. I want the magic bullet.
Okay, but do you remember what I just finished saying in the extended intro about
right.
how people come into my office and they want a pill or the magic wand or whatever? That's
yeah,
what
I heard
chuckling.
It, and I'm
yeah.
I'm
yeah.
asking you this even having heard it, because I'm asking it in the way of, let's do all we can. I'm not going to jettison the worksheets. I'm not going to stop listening to the radio show. But, boy, if something's missing in my system, which is really exacerbating anything that might be in slippage, I would like to fix it, wouldn't you? I mean, isn't that an okay thing to think?
Yes, it is absolutely an okay thing to think. It's why they have, you know, I have interviewed people like Dr. Donald Radin, who does a thorough assessment of people and their gut biome, because Dr. Radin would say, you can listen to what John Gray says, and you can listen to what Dr. Albert Mensa says, and they can give you these supplements, but if you take them orally, and your body doesn't absorb them because your gut health is so out of whack that it's like throwing the stuff away because your body can't make use of it. So
mm-hmm.
the fact is there isn't any one answer. There is no magic bullet. All of these different people are striving. They're trying to help people. They're using what's worked for them. But they've
mm-hmm.
all got these fragmented pieces. So just in general, if you've got a specific pattern of upset, and you listen to somebody like John Gray, and he says, oh, I used to have that, and I put these two supplements in my daily routine, and it helped me quite a bit, then you can try it. Or if you've got lots of money, because the insurance
mm-hmm.
won't pay for it, you could go and have an assessment from somebody like Dr. Albert Mensa or Dr. Donald Radin. And,
mm-hmm.
and Donald Radin would say, okay, if we do the assessment and we find out that you're low on this, this, and this, and we've also got an assessment that says, you know, your internal gut biome is way out of whack, then instead
yeah.
of trying to give you an oral pill, we'll give you IV therapy. We'll put it directly into your bloodstream, and we'll help you get jump-started that way. The fact of the matter is, some people go to a doctor like that and have wonderful results. And not everybody who goes to a doctor like that has wonderful outcomes. So it's
mm-hmm.
it's not a matter of, oh, I just want John Gray to tell me what to do. I've had a number of people who tried lithium orotate and it hasn't worked for them. They haven't noticed anything. Now, it's okay
yeah.
to keep taking it because it's not going to poison them or create any imbalances, but they've gotten all excited about, oh, this is going to be great, and then they start taking it and they don't notice anything. But if that's all they're
yeah.
doing and they've got, you know, 17 different levels of ultra-high stress going on, or they're living in a verbally, emotionally abusive relationship, or they're addicted to the social media like we were talking about, and they can't quit pouring the negativity into their mind, then it's not likely that, you know, 4 milligrams of lithium orotate is going to make much difference.
Mm-hmm.
So what we encourage people to do with this work is be proactive and personally responsible. You've probably
right.
heard me say this dozens of times. The goal is for me to get to the point where I'm actually 100% responsible for every emotion I experience. I step into asking myself, okay, how am I creating this upset? What is it that's in my daily living pattern that might be leaving me feeling exhausted or overwhelmed? And then using a variety of things, including looking at my diet and my nutritional supplements, but certainly not focused on that to the exclusion of the mental-emotional work. Because
oh, I wouldn't.
Time and again, yeah. the people who do the bulk of their work as mental and emotional, time and again, they have far better lives
yeah.
than people who are obsessed with, you know, I remember one time we had somebody called the show, and they were just coming back from a trip to Machu Picchu with all these people who were supposed to be enlightened. And they hadn't even gotten, you know, they weren't even out of the airport yet coming back to the mainland from going to Machu Picchu with all of these really enlightened people. And they wanted to ask questions about, okay, well, let me ask you something. If a person's really enlightened, would they say this? Would they do this? So they're with people on this trip to the spiritual Mecca, and they're getting triggered left and right. And they're having all kinds of debates about who's really enlightened and what does it mean to be enlightened, and there's irritability and there's negative energies and people shielding themselves from the negative energies, etc. As you can tell, I was chuckling. I'm chuckling now. I was chuckling then.
Right. Yep. Well.
So it's, for my money, the mental emotional work is a far more efficient way to make progress than the pursuit of watching every trace mineral I put in my system, or looking for the magic bullet.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. You just talked me down to manageable levels again. So that's good. I got excited. Well, I have a friend who's a practitioner of various things. She's very eclectic, always taking courses and adding to her quiver, who offered me, she said, I swear to God, I can cure you of your tinnitus. It's called biomagnetism. I do 3 sessions, 150 each, and at the end of it, you'll be so much better. And I thought, that would be great. I signed on. I did it. She's a friend, too, so. But, you know, I still have the tinnitus, and it's been, the 3 sessions are over, and I told her, what happened? Is it my resistance? And she said, well, I'm going to offer you several more sessions, no charge. And I thought, oh, no, I don't really want to do this. So maybe it is. I was looking for another magic bullet is all it is, Dr. Tim. And she was very convincing. So I got to watch that. Yeah. I did love that interview anyway for a lot of different reasons. It was wonderful. And
For my money, whenever I have somebody on who's willing to talk about a family member that committed suicide, that they, you know, that drove their passion or their own, you know, bipolar experience, and when I have people on that are going to be that open and honest, I enjoy it immensely.
Well, I can see why. You're really in the real stuff. So that's wonderful. He mentioned a book he had just written, something about helping the boy or saving the boy. Or it's a book about how to help young men cope with our culture, which is so down on particularly young white men. And I have 5 grandsons, all of whom are feeling that and talking to me about it. And I thought, oh, I need that book. So I went online and couldn't find it. Maybe I got the title wrong, but in all the lists of his books, I couldn't find it. Do you remember the title? I could always listen to the podcast again, too. But
I'm trying to look it up as we speak because I do not remember. He has the Beyond Mars and Venus.
That one looked sympathetic to men, too. It seemed to be addressed to issues that men have. And that might be a good one, too. I'd like to kind of screen it, but I can't imagine it wouldn't be great for 2 of my 5 particularly grand boys who might be willing to look at that and find some solace in it. I get, they call and they rant about how they can do no right. It's like they are being blamed for being young white men. They feel boxed in.
So what do you tell them?
Well, I don't know. I've talked to them a lot about it. I couldn't tell you. Just how okay they are, but how hard it must be. I commiserate.
How about this is so, can you hear me? Can you hear the wheel spinning in my mind, screening this, trying to come up with the perfect way to say this?
Okay, I'm listening.
How about from the wise grandparent perspective, helping mm-hmm. them understand that while they are wonderful people and they have a lot going for them, that we can all always learn more about ourselves and about the ways in which we... All right, you might be talking about the book Conscious Men by John Gray and Arjuna Ardagh, the practical guide to develop qualities of the new masculinity. Is that the one?
Well, I don't recognize it, but it sounds very good. Say the title again, please.
It's Conscious Men.
Okay.
A practical guide to develop 12 qualities of the new masculinity.
Wow, okay.
It presents a roadmap for the challenges men face today in living their fullest potential. So that's probably
good.
The book you're talking about, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Presents a roadmap
good, yeah.
for the challenges that men face today, living their fullest
mm-hmm.
potential. It also has a to women section, offering women insight about how to recognize a good and trustworthy man.
Okay. I always thought I was pretty good at that. But who knows? You could always learn something. Yeah. Okay, thanks, Dr. Tim.
The other thing before we lose it completely, because that popped up, I just want to say that if my sons or grandsons come to me and they tell me about how it's so hard today because as young white men or established white men, they're being attacked at every angle, I always try to listen and say, yes, that's a very difficult situation. I can understand how that's a challenge for you to know how to respond. And I try to let them know that there's been a lot in our culture that's been amiss, that's been abusive, that's been hidden from our view. And every time I hear a criticism and I am in a good space, I'm also looking for what it might teach me.
Mm-hmm.
So I want my friends to have their ears open to how life can improve if they apply their wisdom and their intellect toward growth rather than toward clinging to stability of what was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. In the case of one of them, I'm sure he's not clinging to what was. He just doesn't feel as if he has his pontoons out. He's at a loss. He's just watching. It's like he's treading water and listening and watching and trying to be open, and it's just challenging. Yeah.
Yeah, but most of us have been raised to think it's perfectly okay that men make more than women.
Yep. That's true.
Yeah.
And women are
That's just one of the many distorted perceptions that a lot of people take for granted and don't even understand it's there. They're blocked
mm-hmm.
in a bias in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so when I have anybody, one of my sons who's a, and they're both, you know, just about as white as you can get, right? The grandparents on both sides are Irish and German.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as we know, that's in their bloodline, and they look, you know, very Caucasian and very white. And if they come to me, I try to highlight for them the fact that they have privileges they aren't even aware of. They're blind to what they've been taught and how to think about themselves and others. They're as blind as, you know, an earthworm. It's amazing. So while I empathize with them that it is difficult to, you know, seem like, to feel as though they're being attacked and no matter what they say and do is wrong and they can't get it right, I also want them to understand that not everybody who's suggesting they look at themselves or that part of what they're doing might be adding to a problem, not everybody who's suggesting that is just out to knock them down.
Right? Right.
There are a lot of people who are saying, look, we're living in a very lopsided, unhealthy culture, and if we stay blind to it, we can't fix it in any way.
Yep.
So we have just a couple minutes. Let me turn on Ellen. She put her hand up here. I just noticed. Ellen?
Hi, Dr. Tim. Hi, Susan. I just wanted to chime in with Susan, if you get that book, share with me the section that's for women. I think I could use that.
Okay.
Deal.
All right.
I don't think I'm going to buy a book that's primarily for men, but when Dr. Tim mentioned the section that's for women, that sounded really appealing to me.
Right. Right. Well, I am definitely, I'm going to look into it because I want to have some more things to say and how to work with the grandsons, and this might be helpful. So I can rip out the section on women for you. No, I'll read it and give it to you. Yeah.
Okay.
So, Dr.
Well, again,
Tim, I have a
title.
Little,
go ahead.
I have a little Tao Te Ching by Stephen Mitchell. That's Byron Katie's husband or partner. A little pocket I Ching that I love. And so I'm glad you mentioned yours. I'm eager to see that too. The one you were quoting from or telling about.
Yeah, that's by Alan Cohn, and it's different than anyone I've ever seen before because he doesn't just list the statements in the Tao Te Ching and then try to interpret them differently. He actually tries to talk about how the lessons that he does cover from the Tao are applicable in our current lives, practical application of these wisdoms.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you both for your comments and questions. We are down to our last minute or two, and I will mute you so we can make the transition and remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I came in late. What book is it that you're talking about?
The one we were talking yesterday about, the interview I did with John Gray, and his most famous work was Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus. But in 2015, he wrote another book with Arjuna Ardaghj, Ardaghj, and that book is titled Conscious Men, A Practical Guide to develop 12 qualities of the new masculinity.
Awesome.
He says it presents a roadmap for the challenges men face today in living their fullest potential.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
And we did not get to, I don't know how long you've been on the call, but someone just put their hand up, area code 314. We haven't given them a chance yet.
Very good. Okay.
All right. Have a great show. Bless.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, April the 21st, 2021. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions. because that makes this your show. And I'm going to go ahead and turn on 314 while we're waiting on Michael to come in. So welcome. Who do we have?
Hi, Jeannie. It's Doug. I just wanted to quickly chime in that I think the book Susan may have been looking for is The Boy Crisis by Gray and Warren Farrell. Because she got that from the podcast, which I didn't watch, but it was something John Gray, I thought, had been a part of, and he wrote that with William Farrell, The Boy Crisis. So I wanted to pass that on to her as possible. Useful. Now I'm not hearing anything. I don't know, my phone or something else here.
Oh, I said, sorry, I was typing, so I hit my mute button. I'll put that in the notes. Thank you for that.
Okay.
And then I ask, how was your day going?
Oh, well, it's going okay. Not great. I wasn't really going to.
You didn't intend to get into your stuff, right?
Right. I just heard that conversation and knew the book, and I wanted to put that in
okay.
there.
Okay, Susan sent me a text and said to tell you thank you.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right.
So you sure
Jordan
you don't
Peters
want to get into your stuff?
I just say that Susan Jordan Peterson has some excellent material that might be useful as well. Okay, that's
okay.
Just my sense on that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to listen to what's happening. So, for the moment.
Very good.
I may review.
All right.
But indeed, feel the need. Thanks.
Well, if you do, you just press 1, and we'll be right here.
Got
it. Come on, Doug. Come on, Doug.
Susan sent me another text and said, tell you to go rip it. Go for it.
I'm totally unprepared for coherent thought on anything else at the moment.
Come on, we need some grist for the mill, Doug.
Michael.
Can't you give us something, some kind of a morsel?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. I got it. So your work is you're done. You got it all him. That's awesome.
No, yeah, right. No, that's far from the truth. I just don't know what my entry point would be. I have to organize my thoughts. If you don't get callers, maybe I'll push 1 a little bit.
Okay. Sounds good. We appreciate you.
Thanks. You betcha. Bye.
And we send that young lady in your life our love and blessings, and we ask everybody in the community if you'd please send support. So, Diane, you've heard her on the show before, and she's been going through a COVID round. So holding her in love and just ask everybody to send love in her direction and healing and support. She's doing pretty well. Looks like she's on the upside of it. Thank God. So holding her in a blessing.
So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here with us as we enter into this conversation one more time and see as how Susan is there wanting Doug to hang out after pushing 1. Maybe Susan could give us a little grist for the mill. Maybe there's something happening for Susan. She
I
really
just you
made the projection that she wants Doug to talk.
You guys are sly.
Maybe it's projection.
I was on Tim Hayes's hour talking about the podcast with John Gray that he did, where he talks about the importance of nutrition and balancing our making sure that we have enough minerals and he talks about a kind of lithium, which isn't the kind that's prescribed by psychiatrists. I can't remember the name of it, although it's been said to me so many times, octate or something like that. and how getting the right stuff into your system. Yeah, right. So I called Dr. Tim and said, has he made a concoction? I'll buy it. I mean, it sounds as if he listed a lot of things, magnesium, zinc, calcium. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to set up an apothecary over here, but I would love to, you know, if he has made a concoction and is selling it, I'd love to try it. And so that's how we got going on that. But it was a wonderful talk. I was just interested on the fact that his what he writes about is so much like your work, and that often happens when we get to a certain point. We realize some basic things is it's all an inside job mainly, but it was just fun to hear. It's very good if you haven't listened to it, not that you have a whole lot of time, but John Gray, he's the one that wrote Men Are from Mars and Women Are from Venus, and he's written about 20 books, I guess, now. So I didn't have a real issue. Well, I always have issues. Who doesn't have issues? But I guess I'm just dealing with, I loved what Jeannie said the other day about how she had had all these wonderful realizations and then went down into the depths. I have been doing that. I'm okay now, but it's like being on a roller coaster ride, and I love that you call it a healing crisis, and I'm always hopeful that it'll pass soon, and it always does, knock on wood. The concept of a healing crisis is the best thing. Otherwise, you'd add panic to your panic or depression to your depression, whereas you can look at it as a positive thing, a natural phase in growing and healing. But I love that Jeannie told about that. And I had a friend who was a psychoanalyst years ago who suffered from depression himself. He said, depression is hell. And so, you know, I just felt for Jeannie that she went through that, and I'm so glad she came out the other side, and I hope you're still out the other side, Jeannie.
I am. I'm doing really well. But it was, you know, I told Michael it's like it was not in my conscious level of what was, I couldn't have even pinpointed at the time that it was depression. It's just like this darkness. And
wow.
I just said, you know, I figure that I'm just tired. And
yeah.
But yeah, it passed, you know, during the night, I mean, through my dreams and things like that. So basically, you know, 12 hours and it was gone. Whereas when I first went through the experience, it was years.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
And I would offer to you another thought in there. My offering would be, it didn't pass. It healed. There's a difference.
Cool.
You know, if people ignore things long enough, if they eat enough junk food, if they drink enough whiskey, if they do this and this and this, they say, well, yeah, that passed. I'm finished with that now. But it's under the surface. But what you did was open the space for deeper hidden parts of your mind and your physiology to show up, and you courageously stayed with the process, kept doing, which is the exact opposite of what many people do. You kept doing the right things. Many people, when they go into that healing crisis, step into doing more of the negative habits and reinforce the factors that keep trauma going and moving in the system. So rather than just it passing, which, you know, they say time heals all wounds. Well, no, it doesn't. It just allows us to hide from ourselves. And so we're not, in this work, we're not looking to get things to pass. We're looking to face things, to be with things as the truth of them is in our minds, and then bring the bigger truth delivered by the active presence of love forward and transforming, transmuting that energy. And so it did more than pass for you. You know, you were in the depths of it, and knowing, understanding how the healing process works, and And your going through it gave me still another level of insight into the process, being so close to it. You kept on track. It was not something you could verbalize, but it was something that you were willing to be with and kept inviting support, asking support, doing the right things. Didn't run and, you know, take your favorite drug, you know, get a mouthful of sugar or caffeine or what have you. You stayed on track and you came out the other side of it. And that's the difference between healing and perpetuating insanity. So that would be my offering.
I accept.
Does that fit me? Yeah. I'm with you. How about you, young lady? What do you think, Susan?
Oh, I think it's great. I think it takes a lot of courage, and I do know about that kind of tall. I had a good friend in New Haven when we lived there, and she was older than I was. And I asked her one day, how are you? And she said, I don't know. I just can't get anything done. I just can't focus on anything. And I said, you sound depressed. She said, oh, no, I don't think I'm depressed. I just can't get anywhere. And then she called me later and she said, you know, you're right. That's what it is. And now I can do something. I guess she didn't even have a word for it, but it's aimlessness. And she was a very productive, very bright woman. So this was a hard thing for her. So...
Yep, it's a challenge. And, you know, if you don't have the brain cells, you can't go to a new level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the reasons for doing this show is to support people continuously hooking up to a higher set of brain cells than the world runs on and being able to walk and work through those things that never belonged and not get stuck, which is what...
Right.
Most people do because they don't, it's like they don't know the next step to take. You know, if your car, you know, you've got a tire in your car that's going low, you've got the brain cells, you know the next step to take. You go and you get air put in the tire. If the tire goes soft again, you know there's a leak. You got the brain cells for that. Mm-hmm. But we don't have a healing-based culture in our culture. We have a disease-based culture. So even docs don't know. Doctors don't know that, oh, you just got to the next new level of vitality. You are rocking. You are going, okay, so watch what's going to come up for you next. It's like, and when people come in with that next, they say, well, here, let me give you a drug. Let me just see if we can shut that down so you don't have to deal with it, rather than, oh, boy, that's so cool. Let's empower you. Let's strengthen you. Let's move through this. Here's a new nutrient that can help strengthen you and keep you on track.
Yeah. You know, Michael, today in my Zoom class, one of my people who comes in, who comes and goes and comes and goes, came in and said, I'm feeling so great. And I said, what happened? And she said, I'm on an SSRI. And I think she said it was Zoloft or something. And she said, I know I have my work to do, but this has put me to a point where I feel as if I can now get to work. I wasn't even well enough to get to work. And now I'm in couples counseling with my husband. We were separating. We were going to separate. We're finding our way back to each other. She has the commitment sheet. She said, we're using those principles, we're treating each other intentionally much more kindly. I've sent her the responsibility communication sheet too, and she said we're using that. And that plus the work with the therapist plus the drug, I think I can climb out of this abyss that I've been in for so long. So there again, you know, there's a drug there. And I know you have said, if you have a terrible headache, take the aspirin. You haven't ever said, don't take what the doctor might offer. But you have said, if I got you right, you said, take it and do your work and get off it as soon as you can.
Take it and do your work. That's the key. It's like, you know, there are two different arenas here. There's treatment and then there's healing.
Mm-hmm.
Our culture...
Yeah.
Corvée's treatment as healing, and it's not. Taking a drug has never healed anything for anybody. This woman, and she's being, you know, in her condition, it sounds like she's being supported by the drug, and that's awesome, you know. And if she were to just live the drug out, it will create probably some pretty monstrous diseases for her. But she's got it in its proper place. You know, there's a place for that stuff. No question. It's called treatment. It can be hugely, hugely helpful. And in a case like she's talking about, gee, I've got enough relief that I can get conscious and do my work. So now we've got treatment laid alongside of healing. That's the perfect combination. I wouldn't suggest that people do only healing either, because that can be a challenge. If I'm missing a nutrient and I have this issue that I want to deal with and I eat junk food and I never do anything about my dietary regimen or get the nutrients that I need, I'm never going to work through this issue. I'm never going to heal this issue because I don't have the vitality to without that energetic nutrient that is needed for my tissue structure to function properly and for elimination to occur properly, to remove that. So, you know, it's like, let's do all of the above, and it's right on track. You know, that's awesome that she's doing both and that she's got someone there to support her in doing it. That's fabulous.
She came back to the group. I mean, she hasn't been there for several weeks. And, you know, I don't hound people. I say, we miss you, but, you know, it's one of those come and go as you need sort of arrangements. So she said she's really ready to get to work, and she is working, and it's so great. So she's definitely using her tools.
Well, she'll probably have some sweet experiences to share with the group to open the understanding of healing. You know, that she'll probably make some major contributions with that combination of tools in hand. That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
if there isn't any hands up, just what?
Go ahead.
Sugar. Sugar has been an addiction of mine. I have a way of giving it up and then letting a little bit creep in. And I look at my tongue and see if my tongue is looking coated, because that's the dead giveaway. Don't you love that word? Anyway,
actually, your tongue being coated is a long way down the line from telling you you've got a problem.
That's good to know, because anyway, I know it's part of the healing
If you wait for your tongue to get coated, you've wasted a lot of time.
Okay, good. I'm glad. That's great reinforcement. I hereby announce to the small community that we are, that I am going off sugar again. Bully, bully. I mean, who cares? But this is an ongoing thing.
We care about you, and we care about your healing. And we're delighted that you're ready to take yourself to the next level, and you're going to go to the next level of vitality. And that means that a new layer of healing opportunities are going to come. This kind of fits with the whole conversation. I made an announcement about this yesterday. I was talking about, and I shared a little bit, but I have another person who has been involved in this work and disappeared from this work and touches in occasionally and is involved in many conspiracy theories and, you know, such a lot of hostility going on. And we spoke back, maybe 3 weeks ago, and I confronted his conspiracy theories with what for me was truth and invited him to look. And at one point, he just literally, over the phone, he's out in California, he literally screamed at me. I mean, raging, screaming over the phone at me because I was calling I was calling BS on his BS. He did not like it. And he sent me a video yesterday where he's also a musician, and he wrote a song, basically a new way of presenting his conspiracy theories and BS. And so I took some of the basic information we've been talking about and that I shared yesterday, and I'm going to just share it the way I'm writing it. I'm not complete with it as yet. It's an ongoing piece that I'm writing to him, but I'm just going to share it the way that I have been writing it, and it just expands on this principle that we're talking about of what happens when the healing crisis comes. So I'm writing to him, and I'll, of course, keep his name private, but I'm writing to him saying, suggestion. Instead of figuring out how to channel your rage energy into fake causes, I encourage you to get out the worksheets and begin again to do your real healing work. Recall the last conversation we had, and you went off like a raging maniac at me, as though I could possibly be the cause of such insanity surfacing from within you. My dear friend, you've gotten stuck. Here's what's happened. Each new depth of experience of the presence of love, each peak experience, each new level of vitality requires a new level of commitment to do your work. For there is a danger that comes with the peak experience that everyone desires. A new level of love is a new level of vitality, which means a new depth of unresolved dynamics works its way to the surface and becomes transparently integrated into your perception. Your new rage, grief, pain-based perception looks like enlightenment from the inside. After all, I just had this wonderful new insight and experience, so my perception must be on track, right? No. All mind constructs that contain any form of fear, hostility, or even the slightest irritation are projections. Remember, you're feeling it. Each perceptual construct is a reflection of and sourced from your physiology. It informs you accurately about the content of your mind. No matter how subtly denied and pointed by a false perceptual construct seemingly at another object of attention, including and especially self or those in close proximity, a spouse, a friend, a teacher, supporter, or enemy, or even me, all perception is based in even the most subtle fear and or hostility is false. It is a lie. It is insane, and a teacher who's worked through that level of deception in his or her own mind is needed or one gets lost. My friend, you've been entrapped by your unresolved power person dynamic of what looks like rational rage. There is no rational rage. Rage is a drug, an internally produced anesthetic that is a deeply deceptive cover for dissociated pain that sooner or later has to be allowed to surface in the presence of pure love in order to be transmuted. To maintain access to that new level of love and aliveness, you must work through what has been loosed by the new level of vitality and aliveness that has been achieved. If that piece of work is not done, that newly available unresolved associated content becomes the new root of the perceptual output of the mind and becomes the new norm for your view of the world. That world, the world of false perception, is an internal construct that sadly many get lost in for their whole lives.
Bravo, Michael.
And
it's
that's
great
the
that
danger.
You can do that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm learning. You know, I am the perpetual student. And
well, it's
this,
a tremendous challenge. We talked about that in our Zoom meetings about conspiracy theorists and what's the momentum or the impetus behind that. And it seems to be fear, just needing to have control of information, whatever it is. But I have done worksheets on a friend who's a conspiracy theorist, and that letter, boy, really good.
Well, I'll post it to you, and perhaps it will help to open the space for healing. And for me, it's a new level of comprehension that empowers us with this work to really support people, you know, as you say, people come and go. And oftentimes over the years, I've seen people who left, and it maybe took 10 years for them to come back. And I'm realizing now I didn't have the brain cells for it back then. I couldn't explain it. I didn't understand it. But now I'm realizing what happened is, you know, they hit this new level and they loosed some of that old trauma, and that trauma became the new norm that they saw the world through, and they projected it. And until that's understood, you know, we're stuck with it. And so, you know, it's all a matter of building brain cells and getting to the point of making the new level of vitality so present that everything less than that dissolves.
Mm.
So again, the task becomes taking that new level of vitality and really doing what it takes to maintain it and have that as the root of the new norm for the perceptual output of your mind, rather than the garbage that's loosened up by the new level of vitality displacing sanity and becoming the new norm for the mind. So it's an interesting process. We're learning. I saw, on we go.
Sure. Yeah.
So anything else on your mind for today?
No, Michael, that was good. Thank you so much. And if you would send me that letter.
I will. I've got a little more work to do on it. When I complete it, I'll send it.
Well, there's no rush because we're not really even talking much. So we know we're on different sides of the fence. And I think, you know, we don't want to come to blows, or maybe we do and we're avoiding it. But anyway, yeah.
Well, this fellow that I'm writing this to is someone that, I mean, he did the work 20 years ago. He spent a whole summer at Heartland. And actually about the third, he came for a 9-day intensive. And about the third day he was there, this dynamic happened. He went into a rage. He got in his car and drove away. He was leaving. And about half an hour later, I realized that he'd taken off. So I called him and said, what are you doing? You're in the middle of your healing process. Get your buns back here, which he did do. And Jeannie will know by this description who it is that we're talking about. And he spent the whole summer at Heartland. And, I mean, it was a crazy summer. This guy was pretty out there with his whole perceptual mind and an abusive past and several addictions. And he gave the addictions up for the summer. And his addiction was to excess. And one of the things we were doing at one point that summer, and this will cement it for Jeannie so she knows who I'm talking about. I haven't mentioned this, sir. This has just been a recent conversation. But we were doing a liver flush. And when you do the liver flush, you do about 4 ounces of high-quality olive oil. So he joined us in doing the liver flush. But he decided that if 4 ounces was good, then, and I forget, he did like 3 or 4 times that. He ended up, you know, I mean, talk about a cleanse. He got one. But he's a person who, you know, just like he does everything, just he's like he's going for it and does it to excess. And we've, you know, kept in touch over the years. He's kind of backed off of the work, but we became friends and we touch and we kibitz and we've been able to play with these, you know, this conspiracy stuff, you know, who's on which side of the political spectrum, and we kind of play with it and kibitz with it, and it's been okay. But just a few weeks ago, it was like it became just a little bit too outrageous, and I really put my foot down and said, wait a minute, cut the crap. This is just pure, and I mean, literally screaming, raging on the phone. So,
well, that's
so anyway,
an
that's all,
right
for me,
there.
That's been part of this learning process. It's been part of what I'm learning about what this plateau is that people can hit and how to get off of it. So,
yeah.
What fun.
That's good that you can say that. That's wonderful. Good.
Well, you know, there's a saying a friend of mine up in Wisconsin has, and she has a workshop called Taking Yourself Lightly, and her byphrase is, angels can fly because they take themselves lightly.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I tend to take myself heavily or anybody else, there's my next piece of work.
Yep.
Very sweet. Thank you for your input on the worksheet, by the way. I will be integrating some of that. Not for tonight, but I'm doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. I didn't know if I was really overreaching there, but I have a sub-personality
right
that it's on a copy
track.
Editor.
No, please. Please, any more feedback like that, I'm right here for it. You know, this work is developed with help from a lot of people, and I appreciate your inquiring mind, your wisdom, your intelligence and input. So it is very much appreciated.
Thanks. I'll be on tonight when I can get there.
Right. I understood that from your message. So, sweet.
Okay, good.
All right, well, we'll talk to you later, young lady.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
All right. Blessings. Appreciate you. All right, Machini, I'm going to jump in and read a paragraph or two from Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We're on I think it's chapter 10 on ancient wisdom. And we're talking to Richard, the character in the book, about the Aramaic language and that there's a big disconnect between what was taught in many of the original, what have become religious teachings, and they were teachings that weren't religious at all. And so we've been talking about that with this character, Richard. And by the way, we're on page 58 if you're following us in the book. And if you don't have a copy of the book, you can find it on Amazon or on eBay. Usually you can find a used copy. We put out a bunch of tens of thousands of books back in the early part of the century. Seems strange to say now that we're in 2021, but that's what we did. So there are a lot of those books still hanging around as used copies that people are selling on Amazon or eBay, what have you. So you can order it there, or you can go to our website and you can download it free in any one of several different languages. So please get a copy and read with us. So we're looking at this idea that things are not always as they appear from the words in the ancient scriptures, that the Aramaic ideas were at a whole different level than what is presented by the average teacher of scriptures. And so Richard has just told me how a lot of those, you know, the sayings and such haven't made any sense to him, and how the hypocrites would do the exact opposite of what they said they were going to do or were advising others to do, and how turned off he was. And so I offer him the thought, I hear it was confusing for you to see people not walking their talk, with the amount of energy and resistance you have around that conversation. I suspect you were abused due to their hypocrisy, were you? My folks talked about love and honesty at church, but beat me up verbally and physically at home. If I spoke up or asked why they acted so differently in public, the beatings doubled. I had to lie to keep the family secrets. I had to be dishonest in order to make it look like everything was okay, or I'd be punished. Keeping up appearances was demanded of me. It was pretty crazy. While I was being lectured on the value of telling the truth, I was required to live a lie. Richard bit his nails as he replayed his story. The way he was sitting reminded me of a scared, angry little boy, perched on the edge of his seat, ready to escape. I saw hypocrisy in the minister and the deacons. Lots of people. They were always telling me I was a sinner. That was painful, he said. As he finished his story, he was rigid and holding his breath. Take a breath, Richard. Holding your breath is exactly how you acquire a past about something and carry it with you. Holding your breath attaches the pain of an experience to a reality in the mind. If that reality is triggered, even though external circumstances do not justify it, there will be pain. And so we'll just let that couple of paragraphs sink in and recognize the deep, deep, deep significance. I mean, beyond what we could even conceive of staying connected with your breath, of keeping, especially in the face of trauma, your breath moving. Most people subventilate most of their lives. And when we subventilate, we lock the pain and trauma that we're in resistance against literally into the tissue structure. And allowing the breath to move. You know, when you find yourself and I'm coming with these feelings, I don't want to feel them, I don't want to be with them, just notice that what most people do is they just stop breathing. And that's the way of holding on. The way of letting go is to keep breathing, to keep the presence of love there and keep the breath moving so that you can process through those feelings. You know, in the ancient scriptures where they told us in the Greek translations that, quote, unquote, God sent out his spirit, doesn't say that in Aramaic. What it says, quite literally in Aramaic, is the Creator sent out its breath. And when we cut ourselves off from the breath, we cut ourselves off from the Creator. When we cut ourselves off and it becomes an habitual state, subventilating most of the time, you know, I mean, people actually subventilate so much they have to get machines that they get attached to keep them breathing, especially at night. And if you've got one of those machines, I invite you to take a look at why is it that you're holding your breath so much that it's such a habit that in sleep you forget to take a breath. And it's a big money business, and I don't want to offend that business. Well, maybe I do. But we need to learn to breathe. We need to learn to keep our lungs functioning and open and moving because it's a direct link energetically to the active presence of love and the Creator. And so that's our lesson from the book today. And we are now at the 136 point. It's now 136 or 137 maybe. Not sure, this clock's a little weird. So we're down to about 22, 23 minutes, which means we've got lots of time for a conversation. So how is everybody doing out there? And if you have a thought or a question for us, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581, 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you have a question, push 1, and we'll be having a conversation. So, again, if you're on one of those stations where you can't see us, call. You'll be listening to the show directly on your phone, and then ask your question by pushing 1. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in listener land with a hand up or anything happening in the phone queue or in the chat room, I should say?
No, there's no questions in the chat room, and there are no hands up. So we have 20 minutes now. If someone presses 1, you're first in line. You've got plenty of time. You know, yesterday someone pressed 1 just as I said, well, we're down to 2 minutes, and someone pressed 1. So we didn't get to you. So if you are on now, press 1, and let's talk while we've got time.
Yeah, it always interests me how people will call with the big question right at the last 2 or 3 minutes. It's like, well, you know, here we've got the space. We've got plenty of time for that conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, push 1. How can we support you? What's happening? What questions do you have about the work? What doesn't make sense about this idea of healing crisis? And, you know, the bottom line of healing crisis is that when you get to a new level of vitality, the things that you've been hiding from yourself by lowering your vitality, and you do things, people do things like, well, stopping breathing, holding the breath, lowers vitality. People eat junk, you know. I mean, you almost, if you go into a restaurant in America today, you almost have to say, is there any nutrition in that food? Because if it's grown on commercial soils, where the K, they're chemical symbols, NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, calcium. And they put that into soil. There are hundreds of nutrients that are designed to be in the soil. And they put that into soil, and they grow food, what they call food, and it looks like food. But if the nutrients aren't there, if the energetic patterns that are needed to properly nourish, that is to keep this energy field called the body-mind unit moving properly, then there's a weakening process. And so if you're eating all commercially produced food and drinking the you know, the drinks of the culture that come with all kinds of chemicals and adulterants, sugar, phosphoric acid, you know, you go to jail if you put phosphoric acid in a laundry detergent today, because they realized how destructive phosphoric acid was to rivers and streams and lakes. But, you know, your little kid goes to school, and guess what? There is a company that gives payola to the school that allows him to put a machine in the school that kids bring money from home for to buy the things, the drinks in those machines, that one of their base ingredients is phosphoric acid. You can't put it in laundry detergent, you go to jail, but you can bribe school officials to allow those machines in the schools so the kids can suck down phosphoric acid. That's where that, you know, that bitey taste comes from. And then load it up with sugar, and they've proven that sugar's more addictive than caffeine. You know, they took rats, and rats have similar addictive pathways to humans, and they put rats in environments where they had two different tubes they could go to for their drinks. One of them had just water, the other one had cocaine, the third one had sugar. And guess what? The stress rats, even when they were purposely addicted to cocaine, would then, when sugar was introduced, would turn to the sugar in preference to the cocaine. And guess what? When they put those addicted creatures into environments where they had things to do, they had playmates, friends, and a rich sensory environment, guess what? They all gave up their addictions. You know, we push addiction in this culture, and, you know, people are addicted. They put them in jail like they're some kind of pariah and they're not touchable. And so, yes, their addictions become worse, but, you know, they learn that if you put people in a punished and punishing environment, they came from a punished and punishing environment. That's why they're addicted in the first place. Give them some tools, give them some support, caring, the presence of love, companionship, friendship. And addictions disappear. And so if we live in a world where we don't support ourselves properly, then we weaken the system and it goes into a disease process. When we come across something that strengthens us, then the system has the ability to start to throw off what does not belong. It's called a healing crisis, and it happens on the physical, mental, and emotional level. Now, energy moving in an energy system is just energy moving in an energy system. If the energy is going in and it's a dis-ease quality of energy, recognizing that there are basically two qualities of energy relative to the human system. There's that which strengthens and builds it and that which destroys it. If we put a dis-ease, a weakening energy into the system, then one experiences the symptoms of disease. If they live an addictive lifestyle, then they use addiction, some addictive substance, to weaken themselves so much they don't get to experience that. When they start to reconnect with aliveness and life and joy and the presence of love, then they're strengthened, and in that strengthened space, there's a reversal of the energy flow, and now the energy that yesterday went in as disease starts to come out and is the healing of that disease process. So on a physical level, healing looks like any kind of physical symptom you've ever had and low energy. on a mental level, looks like any kind of negative thought you've ever had, and confusion. On an emotional level, if any kind of negative feeling you've ever had, and depression. And what Jeannie described earlier in the session was her realizing that she was tapping back into some old energetic patterns of dis-ease. And as you stay connected to love and as you keep processing and moving and breathing, you know, eating real food and nourishing yourself, doing your work, then the energy starts to lift and move out of the system. But on the way out, it looks exactly the way it did on the way in. There's no difference between the healing process in terms of symptoms and the disease process. They are absolutely identical. The only difference in them is what direction is the energy moving? And so when you start asking yourself that question and you start paying attention, there are four things that will tell you that your symptoms are healing in process rather than disease. One is you ask yourself the question, have I been doing more and more of the right things, physically, mentally, emotionally, relationally, nutritionally, exercise? If I'm doing more and more of the right things, then I'm strengthening. Second question I ask myself is, just before this set of symptoms occur, had I hit a new level of vitality? Was I at a new level of aliveness? The answer is yes and yes. Then the third question you ask yourself is, what's happening with my elimination? In a disease process, there's a tendency for there to be a restriction of the output of the eliminative organs. And we're talking about all of the eliminative organs. We're talking about the bowel, the urinary tract, the skin, the mucous membranes, sweat glands, lungs, sinuses, eliminative organs. If there's an increase, now you've got three things that are saying this is a healing process happening. Stay with it. The fourth thing is, and this is especially important to understand if you've ever been addicted, because in the healing process, as the old traumas that were suppressed by whatever addictive substance was used in the past, the energetic signature of those addictions are there in the tissue where the disease energy was locked in. And as it starts to unlock and move out, that energetic signature, if not actual molecules of the addictive substance, start to release. And all of a sudden, one can't think about anything else but that addictive substance. I like to use the example of, you know, everybody's heard about the guy who's been sober for 30 years, was a, you know, the town drunk, and went into sobriety and was sober, had been sober for 30 years and just celebrated getting his 30-year chip, and wow, that's so cool. And there was so much excitement and so much support and so much caring for him in that community that he hit a whole new level of vitality, and the next day he fell off the wagon. Why did he fall off the wagon after 30 years of sobriety? Because as the new vitality moved energy through him, a new level of healing was possible. And along with that new level of healing, whatever he used alcohol to suppress 30 years ago, all of a sudden was in his face. As were the molecules, again, or at least the energetic signature of the alcohol, which meant he couldn't think about anything but alcohol. And not understanding that he was in a healing process, fell off the wagon, you know. The attraction to alcohol became overwhelming. So if you realize that you're in a healing process, then pay attention and let go of any kind of addictive demands that your mind or your physiology makes, or you may tend to fall off the wagon again. So that's the process of healing. And, you know, that old song, I never promised you a rose garden. It's not Dr. Feelgood. And that's one of the reasons why people would rather just stay with their addictions. Well, I like feeling good all the time. I don't want to face not feeling good. Let me just go get another shot of that, you know, whatever it was, a fifth of whiskey, and I'm feeling no pain. Well, what if you breathed, you did your work, and let yourself be with your pain instead of running off and having to, you know, stuff it with your addiction? What if you actually stayed with it and let yourself process through it? How profound would that be? How powerful would it be? So that's what we're here to do, is to support an understanding of a conversation from that perspective, and to lay and support healing alongside of treatment in every arena. And when we lay healing alongside of treatment, then miracles happen in people's lives. Physical, mental, emotional, financial, relational miracles happen in people's lives when they step into the healing process. Why? Because relative to the pain and trauma of the average traumatized person in the culture, when a person becomes a conscious creator, life improves so dramatically that it can hardly be fathomed. And so to the average mind, it looks like a miracle has happened. Truth is, not a miracle at all. It's just the process of healing. So we are here to support the conversation about healing. And if you're out there in listener land, we've got about 10 minutes left. What question would you ask about that process or the use of any of the tools? And if you're out there, push one. We'll be having a conversation. Doug, have you got your thoughts organized yet? So, Miss Jeannie, anything happening in the chat room? Anything happening in the phone queue?
No, it's all quiet. So I turned Doug's microphone back on. So we'll see if he has anything to say. We have 7 minutes.
All right.
Yeah, I really don't think I want to get into anything right now.
That's cool.
Okay.
That's cool.
We did have a hand just go up. So you were
well, I hope all is well in your world, Doug. Good to say hello.
Yes, sure.
All right. Blessings. Lots of love. Okay, Miss Jeannie, you've got a hand up?
808.
Is this Miss Roma? Aloha, young lady.
Aloha. How is everyone today?
Welcome. We're rocking along here.
Good. Well,
how about you?
We had our planning meeting for the October 15th and 16th Divine Science Ministers Association Zoom retreat. And as it turns out, there are three people who we are looking forward to having participate. You're one of them.
Oh, sweet.
So, and Rocco Errico is going to.
Oh, awesome. I haven't talked to Rocco in years. We used to work together a lot. That would be awesome.
I got so excited when I realized that maybe.
That's so perfect.
Yeah. So I just wanted to let you know and ask you, and I'm delighted to hear your response, which doesn't surprise me at all. And I'm just wondering what the two of you could cook up. You're both obviously going to have your own time, but then I thought since you're both there, that I thought it might be a wonderful thing to just listen to the two of you talk about, you know, whatever you want to talk about.
I'm open.
Yeah. I thought you might be. So I just wanted to let you know that that's the latest.
Well, that's fabulous. And Rocco is an amazing teacher. He was my first introduction to the Aramaic language. So I'll defer to him on anything Aramaic for sure. But it'll be a delight to be on a platform with him again. You know, back in the early days, I had a center in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I would bring Rocco into my center to speak. And he had one out in California. And he'd bring me in to speak out there. And so I haven't seen him
since.
So you're
going to be together again.
That's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
I look forward to that. That'll be very sweet.
Okay.
And we'll keep people posted on the show so that they'll get to it. It's October the 15th and 16th, correct?
Mm-hmm. And let's see. Our decision was to invite all the whether they're members of our association or not. And I don't know. I think anyone can. I'll have to just make sure.
Okay.
A frankly, I think this is rather earth-shaking. the possibility of each of you and then the two of you. So I'll just have to confirm that anyone can participate in it. You know, not just ministers.
Sweet.
I'll just try to make sure that we are actually open to anyone who wants to.
Sure. Cool.
Who wants to be
right
there
the
on the Zoom experience.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
my next
sweet.
My next thing. So.
Awesome. Well, keep us posted. I look forward to it, young lady. That's awesome.
Okay. Very much. Okay. All right. Aloha.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Aloha. Blessings. Thanks for letting me know. Well, that'll be fun to be on a platform with Rocco again. He's an amazing, I mean, he is, if you haven't heard of Rocco Errico, he runs a thing called the Noura, N-O-O-H-R-A, which is light in Aramaic, the Noura Foundation. He worked with, he's sort of the protege of George Lamsa, who did some of the original Aramaic translation work here in America. And Rocco's been rewriting his commentaries and worked for years with Rocco, so it'll be a delight and a privilege to be with him again. And beyond that, we've got about 3 minutes left, so if you're out there in listener land and you'd like to have a three-minute conversation, we could do that. Don't everybody put your hand up at once. Any other thoughts for you, Jeannie? We're probably down to past the point of entertaining more callers.
Yeah, we're actually counting the outro. We're less than 2 minutes now. So, no, don't have any other thing. I think, you know, we had talked about it yesterday. One of the things that in the chat room when I was talking with Bob about the depression and, you know, he's actually, I put a link in yesterday's notes. He's written a book, The Gift of Depression. But I said, you know, when you take the drug, it's actually just masking it, the problem is still there underneath, and when you quit taking the drug, you've got to face what was under it. So, you know, being
right.
willing to go through it and willing to face it and deal with it, and instead of trying to mask it and pretend like it's not there.
Yep. Healing compared to treatment, and, you know, an ideal solution is if you're working with a skilled physician to have support for treatment and healing as well. It's like, you know, the best of both worlds. Sometimes treatment can be very appropriate. You know, if somebody's in a lot of trauma, as Susan had said earlier, gee, I've got a headache. I know I've got a headache. Cancel the thought. I'm blessed. I've never had headaches. But I don't have to just go, oh, well, I have to grit my teeth and go through this headache. Take an aspirin. You've had the warning. You know there's something going on in your system. You're going to pay attention to it. You're going to do your work around it. So do the treatment. Take the relief. You know, you don't have to hang out and suffer through those things. And make sure that you don't take the fact that the motivation of the suffering has been removed, that you then just say, oh, well, now I'll forget about doing my work around it. And there's work to be done. And we're here to support you in doing your work and delighted and honored that you're here. Invite you to create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.